You are listening to a sermon by Paul Thiessen, recorded on Sunday, January 30th, 2022, at Point Grayton Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, in Jeremiah 17:9, we read, "The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it?" These stark words have been the zeitgeist interpreting human nature for much of Western society for decades, maybe even for hundreds of years. Today, we will look at two different stories and try to discern which best reflects the reality of human nature. My interest in this subject was stoked last year when I read the highly engaging book, Humankind, A Hopeful History, by the young Dutch historian named Rutger Bregman. So the first scenario, this account appears in William Golding's 1954 novel, Lord of the Flies, which I am sure many of you have read or were forced to study in high school. In this story, a group of young preteen boys are marooned on a tropical island after their plane crashes in the aftermath of a major war. While they await rescue by adults, they try to establish a form of order and governance. And a 12-year-old boy named Ralph is elected their leader. He is charismatic and seems to possess traits of fairness and a sense of justice. As they puzzle with how to organize themselves, some of the boys feel strongly that they need rules. Quote, "We ought to have rules and obey them. After all, we're not savages, we're English and the best at everything." End quote. Ralph tries to establish a sense of order and generate interest in gathering food and building shelter, but most of the boys want to swim or play in the sand. Then there's Jack, who is an egomaniacal fellow, and he becomes representative of the instinct for savagery and violence. Jack's main objective seems to be to hunt and kill the pigs, which are living wild on the island, both for food and also, it's obvious, for sport. They realize the importance of fire, both to cook food and to attract the attention of passing boats. And using the glasses of one of the boys named Piggy, they manage to start a fire. They are determined to keep this fire aflame, hoping that the fire will attract the attention of a passing boat and affect their rescue. However, the boys are so distracted by hunting pigs and generally goofing off that they allow the fire to go out, which generates recriminations and blame as a passing ship fails to see them. They begin to fear that they may not be rescued at all. Military planes battle overhead and a dead airman drifts down in a tree, and two of the boys mistake it for a beast. Ralph tries to get things back on track by holding a meeting, but the possibility of a roving beast on the island is raised after one boy swears he saw it. Thereafter, the meeting descends into chaos, and one boy asks, "What are we, animals or savages or humans?" It then becomes obvious that the beast is in fact the dead airman. It also becomes increasingly clear that Ralph and Jack hate each other, and the boys split into two warring factions led by Ralph and Jack. Ralph's group are the more civilized, interested in starting and keeping a signal fire going to attract passing boats. Jack's group is more frivolous, with the main goal of killing pigs. Another boy named Simon is mistaken in the dark for the beast, and the other boys murder him while chanting, "Kill the beast, do him in." Jack's group then raids Ralph's group and steal Piggy's glasses so they can build a fire. These glasses become very important, representing the ability to keep civilization kind of going. Ralph and Piggy both try to reason with Jack, but Jack's group responds by rolling a boulder at them, which results in Piggy plummeting to his death off of a cliff. Jack and his gang then start a fire on the island, which burns out of control. They also begin hunting Ralph for sport until the British Navy arrives to rescue them. It is at this point that the boys realize what a terrible thing they have done by murdering. We read in the book that, quotes, Ralph wept, innocence, and the darkness of man's heart. That account is, of course, a work of fiction, which never happened, but it won great acclaim for the author, William Golding, including Nobel Prize for Literature. It sold millions of copies and was translated into multiple languages. And although it was a fictional account, it became a touch point for the belief that, left to their own devices and in isolation, human behavior descends to depravity and violence, and that civilized behavior is really only a thin veneer. My second story is a true account and began in the Polynesian Kingdom of Tonga in June of 1966. Six bored teenage boys between the ages of 13 and 16 who were attending an Anglican boarding school. I have to say here that I can't determine for certain whether it was an Anglican or a Catholic because it's referred to in both ways, so Anglo-Catholic, but it was a religious boarding school. They decided to borrow, which was steal, a fishing boat from a local fisherman whom they all disliked. Their plan was ostensibly to sail to Fiji, which was several hundred miles away and really quite unrealistic idea. They were woefully unprepared for their maritime joyride with very little drinking water, two sacks of bananas, some coconuts, and a small gas burner. The skies were fair, with only a mild breeze ruffling the calm sea. That night, they made a grave error and fell asleep with nobody to watch the fire. They awoke to the crashing waves of the storm. They hoisted the sail, which the wind promptly tore to shreds. With no power for the boat, they drifted on the open sea for 8 days without food, except for bananas and coconuts that they brought. They managed to catch some rainwater and hollowed out coconut shells and agreed to share the water equally, with each taking a sip in the morning and another sip in the evening. Then on the eighth day, they spied a miracle, the small and uninhabited island of Ata, which was just a hulking mass of rock jutting more than 1,000 feet out of the ocean. That is the picture which appears in front of your program. The island of Ata had been uninhabited since slave traders had captured and removed the residents in 1863. The boys' boat crashed onto the shore and broke up. Realizing their dangerous plight, they agreed to work in teams of two, drawing up a strict roster for different tasks such as food preparation and guard duty. Later, they planted and tended a garden. They made a pact not to quarrel, but whenever that happened, they solved it by going to separate parts of the island until their emotions had settled. Their days began with song and prayer, and they built a shelter with palm fronds. One boy named Kolo fashioned a makeshift guitar from a coconut shell and a piece of driftwood, and six steel wires that they salvaged from the wrecked boat. Playing the instrument and singing helped to lift their spirits. All summer long, it hardly rained, driving the boys frantic with thirst. One boy, however, recalled how his father had instructed him in extracting water from the exposed roots of trees, and this proved to be life-saving. They survived on fish, coconuts, and birds which they caught in cliffside nests, killing them and devouring their blood and eating the meat. They found an ancient volcanic crater where people had lived a century before, and there they found some knives left behind, which were hugely useful. They also discovered the edible taro root, bananas, and some chickens, which had been reproducing for over 100 years since the last Tongans had left. They captured these fowl and put them in makeshift pens. They fashioned hollow out tree trunks to store rainwater a gymnasium with very curious weights, and a badminton court with hand-fashioned rackets to play a form of badminton. You can imagine how boring you get. They started a fire with friction of sticks after several hours of attempts. And once they got this fire going, believe me, they were determined not to let it go out. And they kept the fire going in a pit by tending and keeping a constant watch so the flame never died. After months of loneliness, they lost hope of ever being discovered and rescued. Then on September 11, 1966, 15 months after they were marooned, they were rescued by a passing fishing boat sailed by a man named Peter Warner. Came from a wealthy family, and he was fishing for fun. He spotted the burned areas on the island while he was sailing past, and he found this, thought this was very curious because this very rarely happens on a tropical island. And so he navigated closer to inspect what was happening on this island. He then spotted the naked boys who swam vigorously out to the boat. They related their astonishing account to Warner, who found it hard to believe it. And so he called the operator in Tonga to check out their story. The operator was in tears, and of course she knew of the story. The boys had been given up for dead, and funerals had been held in their hometown. The outpouring of exuberant joy from the whole community resulted in 5 days of feasting and celebration. And one can only imagine the enormous collective relief of the families. So which story portrays the truer version of human behavior? The Lord of the Flies or the Castaways of Adda? Further in the Romans 7 passage, it says that I know nothing good lives in me. That is my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For what I do is not the good I want to do. No, the evil I do not want to do, that is what I do. In his book, Bregman uses other compelling examples to illustrate that human nature may not be as dark as we often think or believe. St. Augustine of Hippo, writing in the 4th and 5th centuries, first articulated the belief in original sin. John Calvin, in the time of the Reformation, then espoused the idea of the total depravity of man. So what is at the primitive core of our being? Innate goodness or depravity? How do we process these two accounts of human nature from these stories? And how do we square them with the core messages?